Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Sarah McDilling, and I'm so happy to be here today with Dr. Kirsten Pergerson and Catherine Fox to talk about their new book, Womankind.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Now, can you tell us a little bit about this amazing book?
Absolutely. We're just so excited that it's here and it's available for people to read, because it all began with an idea I had on a beach in Christmas last year, where I was really fed up with the amount of denigration you see of women online. Anyone who uses social media, you can't help but notice the amount of just vitriol that there is for women. And one day I just had enough, and I decided that I wanted to try and make my newsfeed a bit more positive, and I ended up wanting to celebrate a woman, and I ended up celebrating my mum, but I didn't tell anyone that. And I asked her four questions and got her to share some photos, and I posted as a thread of tweets. And for once, there was a bit nicer, you know, mood and tone on Twitter for that very brief moment. So I made a commitment then and there to see if I could celebrate two women every single day of 2017. And I had no idea how I was going to do that or if it was even possible. But by the end of the year, I'd managed to celebrate 757 women from 37 countries around the world. And what began as just a simple way to try and make something positive of what can be a really harsh online environment for women turned into something much, much more. And in fact, it moved on from being about that original idea of wanting to find a way to counter trolls, and in fact it became this movement of women supporting women. And that's what I've teamed up with Catherine, who was one of the women I was able to celebrate. I was very honoured to celebrate Catherine as well. And we had a lovely high tea, as ladies do. We had a cup of tea and we said, I think this is showing a lot more than what we originally expected, and what is it telling us about women? And that's how we're here today.
And wasn't it fascinating when you think back to that conversation, Kirsten, because that was kind of mid 2017. So we'd seen the women's marches around the world. The biggest march ever in the US was one of the women's marches after the Trump election. But it was well before something like Me Too came along or Time's Up. So this incredible wave that Kirsten had actually, very timely, you'd picked up on that. And it was very much about women stepping up together, telling their stories, sharing their experience, and also because they were fed up. So at a whole lot of levels, women were saying, you know, this idea that we all stab each other in the back, that we don't support each other, is bunkum. And also, here's our testimony. Here's what we want to tell you. There's good old-fashioned sisterhood, actually, in operation here. And as we started writing the book and analysing what had happened with these this amazing campaign of Kirsten's, but then also what was happening elsewhere, we realised we were onto something that was gold, real gold.
Yeah. And so many women wanted to participate in this campaign, and they were not women that would normally put themselves forward for anything. And I had said at the very start that I believe, and I still believe, every woman is a role model, whatever they're doing. And too often we only hear from high-profile women or from women who might have won a Nobel Prize or done something else extraordinary, whereas what we know is that the women around us every day are doing incredible things in classrooms and in hospitals and in the home with their kids or in care facilities looking after the elderly. It doesn't matter. Every woman is a role model. And this campaign really showed that 757 times, because each woman participated in exactly the same way. So there were high-profile women involved, but they were far outnumbered by just women like all of us, and they had to answer exactly the same questions. They were celebrated in exactly the same way. And frankly, their stories were often more inspiring, more interesting, because they're the stories we don't often hear. I think that was one of the things that got so many women participating that might not otherwise have participated in. And so this book is really a celebration of women generally and the way that we are all doing things that are extraordinary, and to remind each other of that.
Exactly. And, you know, this book is about power. It's about enormous power. So one of the things that was a penny-dropping moment for me, and I said this to Kirsten when she first asked me if I'd put my profile up, and I'd seen the campaign. I thought, oh, that's great, you know, but I was also thinking, oh, yeah, well, it's great, but, you know, is it going to change anything? You know, we've got these embedded problems, the gender pay gap, things I've been reporting on for nearly 30 years. What was the moment for me of understanding the power of this was seeing that unfold, that women were fascinated by each other's experiences, regardless of whether they were a high flyer or not. They were learning from each other. There was enormous strength in the sisterhood, the old-fashioned idea of the sisterhood. And I think that it would be true to say that that has generally been trivialised. That's been seen as being a bit peripheral. Oh, you women, you're having your coffee morning, or you're part of your mother's group, or what are you women talking about? In fact, we've got a number of quotes in the book from some really amazing women saying, yeah, I've noticed that in a workplace. If women are standing around together, a bloke will invariably say, what are you up to? What are you hatching?
Having a gossip.
Having a gossip, are you? And we tend to dismiss it, whereas in fact it's an incredible source of strength and change. Because I think what we're actually seeing unfolding now is a massive change and a power shift. And I think that this book and this campaign has tapped into something quite profound.
Yeah, it has. One of the other sort of themes through the book that we talk about is something I'd come up with. Again, this is all accidental. So Celebrating Women, the campaign, was accidental, as so many ideas are. But the concept of if a woman should be so successful, we should drop the ladder down for the next woman behind and help them up. This campaign, and something that I strongly believe, I know Catherine does as well, is that it's taught us to forget the ladder. The ladder is such a stupid analogy, because only ever one person can be on that ladder at a time. And in fact, you hold on to it for dear life so that no one can get past.
Because it's the only chance.
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah. Whereas what this campaign and what we try and write about in the book is that it's possible for us all to throw down a big fishing net and lift up many, many women together. And that's what Womenkind is all about. It's looking at ways that networks have been doing that for a very long time.
Way back, in fact. When we looked into the history of it, I mean, women have always come together. And that's partly because, by the way, of course men do as well. So by no means are we dismissing that. What we're saying is women have done it because of their particular circumstances in their lives. The fact that they're the ones who bear children, for example, and tussle with reproduction and so on. But also because in many societies, certainly in Western civilization, they've been marginalised. So for them, they've always been on that, but they've come together to share experience. And they've done it. There's part of the book where we looked into, not in a great deal of depth, but pulled on some of the writing about female friendship, which is a fascinating thing and hasn't been really researched or paid attention to in seriousness. And I think that what we tapped into there, friendships are incredible because they bypass hierarchy and family. You know, you can be friends as women right across boundaries. And I think, again, the campaign really uncovered that, didn't it? Women who'd made connections across all kinds of barriers and so on and found each other were really helping, you know, helping them get through life, basically. So I think that part of it was also, again, to me, that was quite an eye-opener as well. And I thought, I've seen that happen so much in the workplace, and that's something that I've been talking to groups in the workplace for many years, and many organisations do have a women's network, and they're a source of untapped strength. Mm. And I think one of the things that we came to in the book is there's a huge amount of organisations and employers can learn from what women's networks come up with and how they operate. There's a huge... We haven't listened to women. We haven't asked them, how does this work for you? What would be better for you? How would you find it easier to do your job even better and more consistently? And in fact, a lot of that's already there. And so there's a part of the end of the book which is really about what organisations can learn from all of this as well.
It's definitely a book for leaders, men and women, but certainly for all women. And Catherine and I have had some fascinating conversations about our different life experiences. So the first chapter is all about my own sort of career journey and leadership journey and celebrating women, of course. But I write quite openly about how I would run from women's networks for the first 20 years of my career. If someone said, do you want to go to a women's lunch, I'd be at the door where I couldn't get there quick enough.
Why?
Because I was fearful that I would somehow be seen as one of those difficult women at work and that gender was all I was concerned about. Now, that was a point in my career where obviously I had tried to fit in. So I started my career in the military where I just hoped no one noticed I was female. And then that continued in other male-dominated environments. And so I adapted that way. And it's not until more recently where I've had more influence and power and been able to ask questions and really notice other women's experiences to say, hang on a second, what is going on? And then once you understand the power of women supporting women, it's just so intoxicating and powerful and empowering. And my experience, I think, probably echoes other women. Some women are probably still running for the door, and this book understands, you know, that's okay. We're all at different points in our careers and our understanding. And Catherine's had a totally different experience as well.
I did. I guess for me, of course, professionally, I wrote a column called Corporate Woman about women and workplace on and off for many years for the Financial Review. you. So for me, there was professional compulsion as well. But of course, I ended up writing that column because I was already fascinated by this whole area. I was brought up in a household that was very fair. I have two brothers and a sister, so we were all treated very similarly. But it was always really apparent to me that there was a huge power imbalance and that stereotypes were ridiculous and were holding us back, but holding my country back. You know, I looked around and thought, why aren't you tapping into all this talent and making sure that we can all thrive, particularly because we're so lucky in Australia. We have so much access to education, women and girls. We're ranked equal first in the world for that. So for me, yes, it had always been not just an interest, something that I really put a lot of time and attention into professionally and personally. So we come from very different, we're the yin and the yang on this one.
Well, we've talked about it ad nauseum, and I actually think you need both. Because we both represent different groups. All women will have a different experience. We quote a lady called Holly Kramer, who's a wonderful leader in business, and she talks about her stages of gender awareness, and that her experiences sort of mirror mine, where initially you're sort of in denial right through to when you start to advocate for others. And that process I think we all go through. But no one's wrong, and this book is not about trying to move people through any stages. We don't lecture anyone, but we certainly share our experiences, and I write quite personally about my career and life and how I've tackled. There was a personality test I had to do once, and it came through with all these qualities, but to me I interpreted them as masculine, and I remember thinking, oh, I've been found out, here I am trying to sort of just fit in, and those kinds of stereotypes, as Catherine talks about. Now, I wasn't evolved enough to recognize that was what was going on until much later, but it's just a fascinating journey to think about how we all look at each ourselves and each other.
And it's hardly surprising, Kirsten. Yeah. I mean, the way the reinforcement for all of that, you know, it's a really perplexing thing. And when you say we should, of course, it is completely understandable. Women find a lot of this stuff incredibly confusing, because we're constantly told, well, if you'd just done something differently. I mean, my last book was called Stop Fixing Women. We've spent a lot of time and money in organisations trying to fix women up, telling them to basically behave like some sort of stereotypical male, which is ridiculous because not all men behave the same way either. But I think that what we've learnt actually is that as women, and this is why this is so exciting, the times are right for us to understand that there is no formula. Being who you are is very important. And also, I completely understand, obviously, where Kirsten's come from. But, you know, we make decisions about people very quickly. So pretending that you're not a woman or trying to keep your head down and say you're not, I always say to women, look, I understand why you feel like that. I couldn't agree with you more. I don't want to be assessed on my gender. Unfortunately, those assessments are made about you almost instantaneously. So what we have to do is make sure that that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're male, female, what age you are, what racial background or sexual orientation. It is about what you do and how you do it. And that's the thing that I think is really uplifting at the moment. I think we're having a genuine conversation about that, and about the barriers that have existed in the past. And so many of the wonderful women who were profiled were so articulate and smart. It didn't matter where they came from, regional Australia, Serbia, you know, the US, wherever. They were so wise about so many of these things, because we actually went back and surveyed them and asked them for some input. And we got quite a good response rate, didn't we?
Yeah, incredibly good.
And they were smart as.
Yeah. No, I just think this book, as Jamila Rivesi says on the front, it really is a love letter to the people that hold up half the sky. And
such
I think
a beautiful quote.
It is such a beautiful quote, and it brought both of us to tears, because that's exactly what it's about. It is about womankind, and it's about celebrating what we offer each other and encouraging women to really tap into that. And I can just feel the difference now than even 2 years ago, where women on social media are actively amplifying each other. So we have a whole chapter on the amplification effect, which is all this really powerful way, simple things we can do to be backing each other up in meetings and liking and retweeting and sharing and buying products if your girlfriend's an entrepreneur or whatever it might be. But those ways are really tangible and make such a difference. And we're just trying to encourage women to get on board with that, which I think they're already doing, but highlighting some simple ways that they can do it anyway.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think that that's a message that is really, again, timely. I think it's just, you know, people are, women are, and what they're understanding also is that for a long time, and it really has been an awareness thing for me too, to understand that so much of that was slightly ridiculed, you know, just in a kind of an informal sense, but also in a formal sense. And now women are saying, no, that's an incredible source of strength and pride.
Yep.
And pride. So I think that this is part of a process of people sort of understanding that and accessing it and making use of it.
It really does feel as though that there's a real change in the air and there's a real, like, you know, progress being made. But in the book you talk about how to make sure that this moment continues as a movement. Do you have any thoughts on how that can happen, like what we need to do?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Kirsten's already mentioned we've been quite practical in the book. So we've set out our sort of stance and why we think it's so important that we look at the lessons from celebrating women. But I think in terms of keeping it going, I think that we've actually painted some tactics. We've actually put together some amplification tips on how you can do that. And I think that we've also said to women, we're not asking you to do something. We're not setting you a to-do list, actually, because most of you are already doing this. What we're saying to you is do more of it. Mm. So actually ramp it up. You have, in fact, a moment, it really is a moment, off the back of all the activism over the last sort of 18 months to 2 years. You are being listened to. This is absolutely essential, and that's something that has changed. People are listening. Now, there are various reasons why organisations, for example, are listening, and some of that's about risk mitigation and fear of scandals and so on. But frankly, I'm not too bothered about why. If they're listening, make the most of it. Use it and actually point out the incredible value that's already there that women are using. And they're using it in the community as well. Each other's advice, referrals. We write about the importance of women referring work or options and tips and ways of operating, especially, in fact, in small business as well. How they do that all the time through their networks. And along the way, by the way, we've really skewered some ridiculously tenacious myths, the idea that women white ant and are nasty to each other, that they don't support each. White anting is eroding somebody else.
Like
by
a queen bee. Like queen bee.
Or the queen bee syndrome, where a woman, the more senior she gets, the more unpleasant she is to her female colleagues and underlings. And this is very tenacious in business circles. There's really no evidence that exists in any kind of broad brush way. Women can be poor in their behaviour, just like men can. There's no evidence that they're more so. And in fact, what we've uncovered is they're incredibly supportive and actively so. They often do it under the radar, though, because of this, up until now, I think, a lot of ridicule. So what we're saying is do more of this. Be proud of it. Get out there and join together. And that's sort of the message we're sending out.
Where do you think those perceptions come from?
Hollywood, Hollywood reality TV shows. And I think if you speak to a woman when we talk about these kind of myths, every time there'll be a woman who said, oh, but I had a dreadful, you know, female boss. And they'll remember that woman more so than any. And they might have had 10 terrible male bosses, but that one woman is held to a different standard and remembered.
We expect more of women. So it does go back to tenacious stereotypes, female and male. And one of the ones that we know from umpteen studies in the workplace is that women are expected to be more caring in the workplace but are seen as less competent than men across numerous studies. So this is very tenacious and it's operated for years. So we hold women to higher standards. And, of course, because they're in the minority generally in management roles or leadership roles or wherever in authority, they're much more visible. So they stand out. And so we attack them. And we only have to think back, in fact, in politics to what happened to Julia Gillard. But there's examples in the Hillary Clinton, examples in the business world as well. So it's fraught. And actually, it's a bit of a no-win. So what we're saying is, you know, all this advice that we send out to women can be really counterproductive, actually.
You can feel a wash in it sometimes.
Yeah, it can be really hard to navigate your way through. So I think that's another thing that has come out really strongly in the book from our analysis, is that it's time to unpick a few of these We don't have evidence for them. Let's actually examine what that's about and understand that we need to change that. And I've actually noticed some of the commentary on women in power is starting to shift. Stop holding them to higher standards. You know, stop making out that, you know, that a woman who's been in a senior job should be expected to behave better. And that's been some of the commentary written about women in senior business roles. And I think we've got to start to call that out and understand that those are double, sometimes triple standards that we're holding women to.
I find that so fascinating. I was hoping you could give me some sort of ammunition, I guess. That's an aggressive word. Some responses for a thing that has been said to me quite often recently, mostly online, and not just by men, just by women as well. This thought that feminism at the moment is a trend and that it's come from Hollywood and that it's suddenly spurted out of nowhere with Me Too and it hasn't been a thing that's been building over decades. When you hear that, when you hear someone sort of, especially when you've been writing about this for so long and it's been, you know, I see Me Too and Time's Up as a result of all of that work, not as the cause.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how do you respond to that? Because it drives me insane, but I get flustered when I'm emotional. And so when I hear that and I get angry, I can never, articulate a well thought out response. So.
Gosh, I think I might be in your camp. The ignorance to suggest that feminism is a new fad.
Yeah, Beyoncé invented it, didn't you know?
No.
Oh, well, I'm a little bit old-fashioned here. I just immediately start to use a few examples that tend to shock people. One of them is that until the late 1960s in Australia, a woman working in the public sector had to resign from her job when she got married.
Oh, my. In the 1960s.
Up until the 1980s, I am told until the late 1980s, a single woman needed a male guarantor to get a home loan.
Oh, my God.
A male guarantor. These are not off 100 years ago. If you want to, you can go back 100. When my grandmother was born, she wasn't allowed to vote. So if you want to, there are numerous examples. It's not that long ago. In fact, it was illegal, of course, to pay women the same as men for doing exactly the same job until the last few decades.
Illegal.
That was the law. Well, it was the law. It was the law. So what we have to understand is that our ability to vote, to be educated, all those basic fundamental human rights have come about from the women's movement, feminism. So that's how
I. Catherine will give you a good response. We're yin and yang. I would invest no time whatsoever in
just
responding to those people, and I go and invest my time in the allies that are out there who do know that this is a really important issue, and go and empower their men and women, and be supporting them, and giving them everything they need to help drive the message. But the people who believe those sorts of things, I don't think you're probably ever going to change their mind, even with the facts, sadly.
I think you've got to do both.
This is our yin and yang. This is our
constant. You've got to do both.
Yeah.
And I'm an evidence person. So I wrote for a financial newspaper for 23 years. You don't write about an area that is highly emotional.
This is a highly
emotional area, even with people that you would least suspect, male and female. I'm certainly not pointing the finger. I've had the most vehement discussions, I think, on the talking circuit, because I do a lot of conferences, with women, in fact, who tell me that it's rubbish, that it's women's fault that sexism exists, that they exacerbate it, that it's their problem, they have to fix it up, which to me seems to fly in the face of logic. But I just think you've got to engage with some of that. I agree with Kirsten. I think sometimes you realise you will never change someone's mind. But every so often, you know, the funny thing is, my husband spotted this once, and every so often you do change someone's mind, and that is an incredible feeling. So I'm not saying you can do it broad brush, but you do occasionally.
It's worth it for those times that you get through. And we would be nowhere if people hadn't persisted.
I agree.
That's exactly right.
Thank you so much for coming in today. It's been so amazing. I feel really awed and inspired by talking to you both.
Thank you so much for
having us.
Thank
you. It's been a pleasure.
And podcast listeners, you can get Womenkind at Booktopia, www.booktopia.com.au.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.